The tip of the tongue, the teeth,
I
the
was
lips.
Just
the
gonna tongue, say the that.
The, the teeth, the lips. I'm just gonna go right into it and say, goddamn welcome to Squish the podcast.
Squish,
squish. What would squish sound like to you?
Squish always makes me think of comfort. Because it's a nervous system reset thing for my anxious brain.
Yeah.
Full yeah. Body squishes.
Okay, welcome to Squish the Podcast, where myself, Tasha, and
Katie
are gonna talk about the vulnerable existence of humanity. So deep as it should be, and mostly because we think it's important to be vulnerable and to communicate, and that's what podcasts are. It's like a perfectly encased, drapey environment in which to get vulnerable and deep about shit. And there's never enough of that in that world.
Yeah, and especially in our communities, like especially after noticing such a solid effort of people to be able to connect deeper and more vulnerably with the way we've been gathering to just communicate and be intentional about our connections in our community. And it makes them all the more sense to share these things.
Speaking of all of us, who are you, bitch?
Who are you?
Why are you in my bed?
So I'm a lucky woman, that's why.
Amen.
It's lucky to be here. I'm Katie Savard, a local creative weirdo. I like to build community and I like to do creative things and make music and make silly noises and connect with people. And yeah, musician, I guess, is what I should say. Yeah.
One of the many things that you
musician,
are.
Musician, organizer, facilitator, I don't know.
Hostess with the mostest. That's, I think, how I first ran into you, is hosting, like hosting. Is yeah, I think I saw you host Burnfest 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want that job. So I'm just here to steal your job.
I want you to have these jobs too. I'm like, it's funny because when I... the more I got to know you, too, the more I'm like, oh, if the scene needs more people who are, like, crazy and keen and want to do the silly shit that I like to do. And I was like, oh, yeah, Tasha's going to be one of these people who, like, does these things. And, yeah, I think you'd be great with – I definitely want you on, like, for this organizing team already in general.
Thank you.
But, yeah, hosting was something for me I stumbled into that became, like, a really – nice outlet to connect with community, because I feel like people are way more comfortable approaching me as the host of an event than like after performing.
Yeah.
Like people still come up after performing and stuff, but it's usually that's just like quickly compliment your set and whatever.
Yeah.
And then you're often in like performer mode where your eyes are ping ponging in every direction and it's hard to make conversation with people. But after hosting, it's like a different, I don't know, it's like a little bit more.
It's like an I'm your friend badge.
Totally. Yeah. It makes it just approachable for things. Like, I'm just like...
my job is to be here for you.
Yeah. But then also, the downside of that is people assume you have the answers to a lot of things.
It's true. Oh my God,
like,
the amount of questions.
I'm a host, but that doesn't mean I know all the things. But then I'm like, now I have to try to know as many things because these questions are coming my way.
I was just going to say that hosting and producing is like being the lube between the world and art.
Totally. You're like the buffer. You're the like administration question answerer. You also become the lost and found.
The finders keepers. The PA at the grocery store. Exactly. Lost child on aisle two again.
This is someone with a Mazda needs to move.
Child is having an existential crisis from the clown number 20 minutes ago. If anyone can send a Xanax, please do.
Do they make kids Xanax?
I'm just... kid is like an open-ended term to me. It's a fluid state.
Your version of a kid is like an adult. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we should grow up. I would love to touch a little bit on, like, how, like, where you're coming at in this community specifically. Like, how long you've been playing a role here and how that's changed a little bit.
Fuck.
Because that's the biggest difference between us, I think.
What is the time? Yeah. Oh, wait, how old are you?
I'm 28.
Oh, okay. You're closer than I thought.
But you've been here a lot longer than me.
In the scene. Yeah, fuck. I've been in Victoria since I was like 11 years old, but I finally went from being like the kid who sings for friends in the basement to like actually trying to do it after a couple of community events in Fernwood. Actually, there was a place called the Orange Hall, which is now just a house. It was a church, then it became a hall, and now people just live in it. But it's like on the corner of Balmoral and Fernwood, I think, and it's like it's this cute little building, and it was like where the first couple of events I had where there was these guys who also, one of them lives in Fernwood and or lived in Fernwood, and they would reach out to people in the community to bring them out and do shows, get them out of their comfort zone and stuff. So like we'd pick songs we like, and then he also just like, gave us songs to do as a challenge, and it really helped me like get over myself and push myself into trying different things. And then it also sparked my like joy for helping other people, because when we did the second one, there was a 16-year-old who was like new to the sitch, and we got to like help encourage her as well. So
you're like, that was me.
Yeah, and it became a thing that like I always wanted to do, which is why like it was a big part of lighting the fire into creating the youth jam series that I do now through Fernwood. So it's a big full circle moment for me to be doing that. But it's been, I think that first one was like 2011 or 2012 was the first one of those shows. And then I was just like, okay, I'm gonna try to do more music. And then I started just like putting myself out there and going to shows by myself awkwardly and hating it, and driving my friend Marco home because he didn't drive at the time, but we both lived in Langford and I was always sober, so I would like, a lot of the shows I would go to were his, and then
keeping our girl accountable.
Yeah, and then he would just introduce me to people, be like, she's just here kicking it, make friends, because she came by herself. And so I would make, it was going Aww. By myself was a good way to meet people.
It is,
as daunting as that can be.
You just faced that discomfort, sounds like.
I hated it. It was, yeah. I was such a like forced extrovert. Like, yeah. I enjoy people and being social, but like the extrovertedness needed to like get into the music scene was a whole other level that was like very intimidating and overwhelming for me.
No kidding.
But I met a bunch of people at a show of Marco's, like the Crude Culture Ska Society people, and they were all like super, super friendly and welcoming. And Jesse's mom and him were teaching lessons at the time, and I took a few piano lessons from her. And I was like, oh, I play by ear. I don't know a lot, but I've written a song basically just like knowing what I know. Can I show you it and you can tell me what I'm doing wrong? And then it can give you an idea of what I know and what you can teach, like where to go from there. And I guess at the time, Jesse was staying with his parents or his mom, and he heard me singing in the other room and like was like, hey, like I have these songs that like don't, he was in the band Rocky Mountain Rebel Music at the time, and he's like, I have these songs that don't fit for this band. Do you want to jam them out with me? And so that was like another really fun thing.
Can I ask you a question about your voice in a second?
Yeah,
I'm just like, did you smoke like 50 packs a day when you were a kid, or are you just born with this like,
I just have that, I don't know timber. What it is. I don't know if it's why. Well, I smoked a lot of weed. Yeah, like I was smoking weed since I was like 12. Yeah, but I also I went through a cigarette smoking phase, but not, I didn't smoke that much.
No, you sound like,
but
someone
who's, I've always had like, quite a low,
yeah,
and my inspirations were often these soulful voiced women, like a lot
the grit.
Yeah, a lot of Black women in music were my inspirations and stuff. But I think, actually, you know what? I was screaming and yelling a lot as a kid growing up. I grew up in a traumatic household where there was a lot of yelling. So to be honest, that's probably what
it's a channel.
Probably what's turned my voice into what it is. Not smoking, but yelling. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah,
I definitely did just always have it.
She got the trauma pipes.
It's trauma pipes. Yeah. But the low stuff was always natural there. And yeah, I met this crazy community of people. I threw myself in the deep end. I even did things I was like, I don't have any idea what I was doing. At one point, Rocky Mountain Rebel Music wanted a background singer. Jesse brought me to that as a trial. And I was like, in way over my head. I was like, I have no idea.
Do you remember any of the songs that you sang back then?
Yeah, all of them. Oh, yeah.
Can you do a little, show us?
From, like, from Jesse and I's thing?
What are those first songs? I'm putting you on the spot.
Jesse and I, we had these songs. We do them every once in a while. Now, there's one I always really, that's like,
you're talking about your voice now.
The hook or whatever of it is. Whoa, let the swells and the waves come rock my ship, I say it.
Oh, oh, let the swells and the waves come. Swells and the waves come. Open up your heart to start. Don't let the bad times tear your world apart. You know the woman once said, if you shield the mountains from the windstorms, you'll never see the beauty of the carvings.
Yeah, there's some. I still remember all of the Jesse songs. We did this album. Jesse went to Indonesia for a while with his family.
Yeah.
And he met a bunch of musicians over there, and he's like, I'm going to record all the instruments here with these guys, and then we'll do the vocals later. So we called the project Tiny Ocean Project, and it's on Spotify. There's songs on Spotify you can hear.
Yeah.
That are from my older days, and you can even tell the difference in my voice between then and now. And yeah, it was chaotic. It was, like, crazy. I threw myself headfirst into it. At one point, I was in Downtown Mischief, the Leg Up program, Sex Weather, like, all the same time. Like, I was in, like, multiple bands at once, doing as much as I possibly could and wearing myself thin. And
ooh, were you burning out?
Yeah, I do that often.
Oh, you burning out, Katie?
And one of the craziest days was, like, I think it was the 2014 or 2015 Skoffest year. I played Fernfest, Skoffest, and a show at the Canby in the same day. It was really stupid. It was really dumb.
Were you lead singing all of
them? Yes. Yeah. Because Downtown Mischief, I didn't really do a ton of leads. There was some lead moments. So the Downtown Mischief show was, like, the chillest of those.
Crazy.
The Leg Up, I had a good chunk of lead parts. And then Sex Weather, I was, like, one of the main lead singers. Like, pretty much did a lot
of
the lead
singing.
Sex Weather
is such a good band name.
It was, yeah, there's only a few songs out under that from, like, when I was in it. There's, like, a handful on that we released Once Upon a Time.
Amazing.
We made a little EP called It 20 Bucks to Fight the Champ, based on a photo of Graham asleep in our kitchen back in the party house days where Nate and I lived together, and there had been a mud wrestling themed party like weeks before, and this handwritten cardboard sign was still kicking around that said 20 bucks to fight the champ, and Graham was asleep on the kitchen floor for some reason, and so we just put this sign in front of him and took a photo, and that's the album cover.
Is that Graham
Boosie
Graham?
What's that band's new name? Gun Street Ghouls.
Okay, I don't know if I know.
But yeah, so it was like very much most of my formative years in the city were just like ping ponging around, doing crazy stuff with different people, trying to do whatever I could in the music, and always wanting to find more ways to go beyond the performing and do the community stuff.
Yeah. Supporting it from all sides.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a juggling aspect because there's so much that goes into everything. You need time for recording and writing and performing as well as all the other stuff. So sometimes one thing goes as one thing comes, which is why by the time I met you, it was mostly hosting and doing this community stuff and, like, less time for performing. Also, just reforming bands after the pandemic seemed like a daunting, crazy thing to do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been... I guess
it's been
more than a decade. This classic ADHD. It's been almost 15 years of me just doing crazy things, and things have changed a lot now in the scene, in the community, from when I came up in it. Like, we're night and day, like, yeah, especially coming around to the Dunn Street events. Mm-hmm. I even said this to Nate, and I've actually had this conversation recently where we were like, these kids party differently. Like, it's so intentional. We're like,
how no old cocaine. Is Nathan?
There's no cocaine in sight. He's older than he looks.
That man, I thought he was like in his 20. 30s. What?
Yeah, he's younger than me, but he's in his 30s.
This is just becoming we're roasting. Actually, that's not a roast. That's a compliment. That Nathan man, he looks so young.
He's young.
He's also in Hot Pot. He was in fit. Hot Pot. Yeah. So I was like, oh, he's like young, like he's baby.
Because him and I both had this similar experience of just doing things a little differently than the folks around us, and we're still seeking that community and creative artistic connection, whereas a lot of other, not that they're not still seeking that connection and stuff, but a lot of the musicians we came up with are like married and having kids and still doing
changing.
It but like slowing down, whereas Nate and I are still really enjoying that aspect of that of the community social realm, and so coming and finding all these new folks who are like really like-minded and really like keen to do similar stuff, and we're just cackling about the fact that parties start at 7:30 now and end at respectable hours.
Yeah,
nobody's really,
because
fucked
we don't want to burn out.
You don't have
out.
To drag anyone out of your bathroom at the end of the night. You don't find random people asleep in your storage areas, like,
no,
without their shoes on, like, what? People don't accidentally almost light your house on fire.
No,
know.
It's like almost like 95% chance that I usually leave my own parties and go to like sleep somewhere else by 1:32.
I know, it's or, shocking. There's the amount of times we went till 7 a.m. in the old days.
We would do that too, but we'd all pile into a giant bed together and cuddle.
Yeah, you guys do the going till 7 very differently. Like, we just do. Like, everybody, for me, it'd be like, I'm trying to keep up with everybody.
We drink our cacao and our bone broth.
Yeah, whereas like back in the day, like, I'm just like smoking weed, hoping I can stay awake long enough to keep up with everyone.
We've done that too.
Who's doing the skiing. And then they've been going all night at 7 a.m. My ass is ready to go to bed. I go take like a nap. I wake up and then they're like, let's day drink and go to the beach. That's a trap because they are just going to crash. And then you're day drunk by yourself. That's why I used to get into that trap a lot back in the day. That's me being in this scene basically, is just threw myself into it, found some good people. And then that crew of homies that like Jesse introduced me to was like, a big influential.
Well, it sounds
part of
like
it,
it nurtured you a lot. It like, did you for wouldn't sure. Still be this committed to it if it didn't bring you a lot of
things. It's basically like my whole world is like community music and stuff. Like I especially the whole neurodivergent aspect and just coming from the stuff I came from, developing myself as a person is something I've done a lot slower than a lot of people my age. And music has had a lot to do with that. Something that I'm probably always going to be passionate about, whether I feel like burnt out and needing a break from certain aspects of it or not.
It's so accessible and adaptable. Mm-hmm. That's all art, really.
Yeah.
But it's always just like a resource whenever you're in any kind of headspace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I love hearing about your journey. It's been swept up by all these lovely bands and they just like help like keep you afloat through it all.
Yeah. So, and different groups of people just like meeting and making like wonderful friends and music. It brings you like these instantaneous connections, which can be like, you know, it can be good and bad because a lot of the times we like, as artists, we like let people in really quickly because we like connect on that level before we either know who they really are or we get attached to the point where we like, it becomes a hard thing to accept that it is fleeting and that in music, like people come and go in your life.
Oh, yeah.
And in a lot of different ways.
Well, it's performative like by nature, too.
Exactly.
So you're putting on this like facade and you don't actually get to the meat and bones as quickly as you get to the facade. And then you have to keep that face on. And it's not even like a thing people do deliberately by pretending to be someone that they're not. But like, I feel like if you're on stage and people are applauding this version of you, you're going to try and stay being that version as you can be.
And I struggled with that in so many aspects just because coming up in the like household and energy that I came up in and stuff, and just like being like such a people pleaser, that it's okay, this version of me people like. So like I need to try to continue to be this version of me, learning about like my neurodivergence and masking and all these things.
Yep.
And like realizing just how much of that was like masking gives you a whole other level of burnout where you're like, oh no.
I'm just existing in a performance.
But yeah, who is Tasha Cadence in the community? How did you find your way into it?
Whose am I?
Whose is you?
Whose is me? Eyes is. I always just do a brief little thing about where I came from, but I came from a really musical family. So like my last name was chosen because my parents were huge music nerds. They just wanted to choose a word and ditch both of their last names. So they chose Cadence because it's like really meaningful to them. And long story short, they were actually out here on the West Coast, but they chose to go back. I was almost a Victoria baby, but I was raised in Ontario, and then my mom took us on a trip to revisit out here because she was like, I used to live here when I was your age and I was looking for a place to land. I fucking landed. I landed hard. And I like have this really hippie story of like I was feeling kind of lost. Then I was like, man, these trees, they don't get to pick where they land. Their seeds just fall on the ground and they just make the goddamn best of it. And they plant their roots and they just fucking and they like really... Trees mean business out here. And I was just really impressed by these trees. And I was like, ooh, I am losing my Ontario-ness by the second when I had that epiphany. But it really did evoke something in me that, like, I'm here right now and it feels good. And I didn't overcomplicate the decision. And Victoria just caught me and held me. And it took me a couple years to, like, find this specific community. But I did find it to just be, like, a very open and warm place, literally warm too, which was really nice because I'm a cyclist, so that's wonderful. But the whole time I would go to open mics and I would play music, and it definitely took a hit during the pandemic, but that's where Quadratic Sound came in handy, because we had our underground under the radar jams. And those were like life-saving. That was my only access to community for a long time. And that was like a spearhead into the music community that I'm a part of today. And I've been able to maintain playing my own music, but got more into the jam community. And I felt like this version of myself, as we all have different versions of ourselves, of being, because I was always a youth camp counselor, lifeguard, person. But then I would bring that into the music environment, which I was already so comfortable too. And it was like these two strengths that I'd been working on converging, of reading a room and seeing like all the different sounds playing together and being able to play a bit of a leadership role in that, and being able to be like, okay, he hasn't played yet, and we've been listening to this motherfucker for 20 minutes.
Jams taught a lot for that. I learned a lot as well, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many like interpersonal dynamics happening, and I just really wanted to make sure everyone had a voice, especially because it felt so rewarding to step into an environment where people let me have a voice in. Like, playing music with other people is church to me. It, like, feels spiritual, more spiritual than anything I've ever experienced, and really grounds me. It feels like where I belong, and I want to share that with as many people as possible. I feel like everyone deserves to have that experience, whether it's through music or just, like, feeling connected to something. But I feel like music is one of the easiest tools to get there. I want people to know that it's easy, too. I feel like a lot of people... feel like it's way harder. Like,
improvisational aspect of jamming is a really good way to connect to your like vulnerable side and your true side, because there's no time to mask when you're just like channeling the music and improvising whatever.
Yeah, there's like this breakdown of the dichotomy of fun, and it just involves connection, flow, and play.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just you're connecting with humans. You're being playful and you're like in a flow state. So it's not overly constricted and planned. And I feel like jamming just allows for that too. And that's actually been like my mantra of becoming a producer. So basically I took all these leadership like background and my music community and put it together. And I was like, okay, again, this was who I was when I was 16 years old. I was like, I'm done looking for the events and the spaces I want to like be in. I'm just going to start making them.
Well, Victoria's scene needs that, because look at so many. It's the only way for the resurgence of arts to happen here the way that it needs to, is the more people taking it into their own hands and not relying on the venues and stuff, because we're losing venues left and right.
Oh, I know. And we're also losing house parties because no one lives in homes anymore. I just moved into an apartment. Like, it is happening. It's a transition that's a little spooky, but music and art always find a sneaky way of.
And the scene goes through that. I remember Nate and I being like, man, where did all the good jam house houses go? Because we went through the same thing where, like, I lived in this house with the Sweetleaf Band, and I'd lived with the Downtown Mischief Boys for a while, and there was always, like, a house to jam at.
Yeah.
And then as you get, I am also now in a suite that's not conducive to having a bunch of people over to make noise, even though my landlady wouldn't care if I did, but it's just a small space. It took a while, and then I started to see those houses popping up again, where it was like, okay, there's cycles of it. And I'm like, finding all you guys and seeing all the little houses that have cropped up in that community.
Yeah, it's so funny the role that space plays in art, because creativity can't really thrive in an overly structured or sterile environment. Like, it really needs to, like, have room to stretch its arms and to feel safe being vulnerable, and that's just... Every time that I've been in a space like that, the growth I see in myself is exponential. And I just feel like it's my life mission to make sure that I continue to do that for me, but then maybe simultaneously, so it's not completely self-involved, I'm sharing that with as many people as possible.
And we need that a lot. Like, just the like existence of a third space is a thing that like has died off a lot over like the years. And that's something that's so conducive to art, is like just places where people gather and create, where it's not always a ticketed venue, where it's not always like the bar with the house band or whatever. It's like a third space where like everybody joins in and whatever, and so you need more of that.
Perfect. That's, I really love that terminology.
It's not mine.
I've never heard of it though.
There's a whole good article about the loss of the third spaces, but it's especially in like old culture. I think a lot of it comes from like the old blues
culture and jazz scenes, like a lot of, I think, and there's a aspect of it too that comes from like artists who weren't welcomed in other spaces. Yes. So they created this third space where, yes, anyone could come and be create oppressed. And do this art. And yeah. So, yeah, there's a few really good articles about the third spaces and the loss of a third space. It's definitely something to check out.
I love that no matter how much like society like self catastrophizes and collapses, artists always find a way.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to live in Windsor, Ontario, which is right across from Detroit. And in Detroit, they had an awesome music scene, but they had no fucking venues. And like that ghost, it's a ghost town. Like you'd be downtown Detroit at 5 p.m. on a Tuesday and like skyscrapers all around you, no cars. Nobody's there. Like it is a ghost town. That town is, it's going through a resurgence, but yeah, basically it was a population of 2 million, 2.5 million, and now it's 650,000, 700,000 or something. Like it more than halved its size. But the art scene is popping off there, and it's because all of the spaces have been vacated from like this very corporate, profit-driven world. And now the artists can like actually access these spaces. And that always gave me hope. Society's falling. That can sometimes be an opportunity for us. I don't feel like modern day capitalism has ever really valued art. So I'm never going to rely on it to value my art in the way that if I can do it on my own, it's somehow going to make more of an impact. Although people like you who are doing your own things and getting involvement from the government and grants and stuff like that, you do make it seem more possible. So I am trying to find the value.
That without the passion of people who like bridge those gaps for, yes, artists, like Firmament NRG, where they're like, they've helped me bridge that gap and being a space that's down to do that. And that's the big thing. Like Victoria, mm-hmm, is losing spaces left and right with the commercial rent hikes and the fact, yeah, that like it's someone who owns the properties like that, it doesn't matter to them that the property's vacant, because if they lower the rent to keep the venue there, it hits their value. Like, yeah, it's, whereas if they keep the property value if it's a high rent but it's, mm-hmm, vacant for 18 months, like, mm-hmm, that's still better to them for some, yeah, reason. That's why we're seeing these losses. And even like the government tried to offer some help to the VEC, but it still wasn't enough to combat like what it would cost to keep it going.
And the counter offer that was being made.
Yeah. And so that's the reality of it. Yeah. And it's, there's no, with the, there's the more and more it becomes difficult for younger folks to be business owners and homeowners and entrepreneurs and whatever,
yeah,
the less likely there's going to be someone to like take the mantle, yeah, of that, like creating a new venue. Like that's something where like that used to happen all the time, where one venue would disappear from this location and a new one would pop in, and it, yeah, would become something else and whatever.
And I think that's what I want to do with this podcast and basically all of my work and energy and as I exist on this planet. I say in a chill way, but it's just make people feel like you have access. You can create access, and the barriers between you and creativity and music and the communal shared experience, yeah, of art is actually accessible. It's so right in front of you. And there's so many of these like real life boundaries or like barricades, one could say, but then there's also like the internal barricades. And I just think,
totally,
that you and I have like, we've cracked a bit of a
code. Huge part of it is the internal stuff, because, yeah, like just getting over myself to get into stuff and, yeah, even just writing the anxiety of, and imposter syndrome around writing a grant and being able to like do this program and do it well enough and whatever, take on this daunting thing. Yeah. And that's a big part of why I am the way I am, because like I felt like there was a lot of gatekeeping at first, like coming into the scene myself. There's a lot of clickiness. There's a lot of like, it felt like there was so much you had to prove to be part of anything. And then there was like, it just felt like there was a lot of barriers to access. Yeah. And so for me, it was just always, okay, whatever I do, I'm going to share my, like,
yes,
just get whatever people want to know. Yes. I'll tell them honestly,
yes,
and hold the door open for whoever needs it. But,
yeah,
and create space as much as I can for those people. And that's why I'm always down to answer random questions. Like, people randomly DM me asking me stuff, like, and I'm like, I'll just tell you what I know.
And one of those being me, being like, will you make a podcast with me? And you show up. And gross day when you haven't slept and you still show up. Doing
stuff with you.
And it's really special. Plus, this is something
I wanted to do. I've wanted to do podcast stuff for a while. I think it's a good... It's a good place to stick a bunch of resources.
And it's interesting, too, because we, like, started this tangent with, like, we have to do the internal work. And it's, like, when we ourselves feel like there are barriers mentally, that creates the projection of the clickiness. Because it's, like, people are, like, still trying to, like, have barriers and protect this thing that is so sacred. Mm-hmm. But in that protection, you're actually still making, like, other people feel intimidated. Mm-hmm. But that all needs to get fucking destroyed. It needs to get torn down. And, like, it is sacred and we do need to protect it in a specific way, but the gatekeeping and the power dynamics of, like, of the music world, or, like, I would just say of capitalism that creep into the music world, actually sharing it is the strength, and that helps it flourish more. And Isaac has this great thing that, like, people aren't just born geniuses.
No.
They have to start awfully. Everyone has
unless
to
you
start...
believe the plot line of the epic 90s movie
baby genius
or 2000s I guess whenever that came out.
But it's just so I think access is like my that's like the thing driving me forward. And I get really disheartened when I see people, and this is something that I want to touch on maybe in future episodes, but the cancel culture nature and just people doing accountability wrong. Because you do need to stay accountable and you do need to protect these beautiful spaces and people involved, and we get so vulnerable. But artists are putting themselves out there constantly with a brand new idea every single time, and those ideas cannot all be correct. You are literally signing up to get things wrong as an artist because you are trying something new. You are always putting yourself out there on the chopping plate.
A lot of people are learning as they go.
Exactly. And you're like, the whole point of art is you're trying something no one else has tried. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to be vulnerable. And I feel like we have to protect those of us who get it right on the first time as much as those who don't get it right on the first time. Don't get it right on the second time. Don't get it right on the third time. And that immediate, we don't have enough mental capacity, probably because we're all really traumatized monkeys trying to live in a scary world. It's fair. But that's what I want to make sure that as like an event person and like a space holder and a producer, I'm supporting that work of making sure that everyone has a voice and we face the discomfort together and we don't avoid it, so that we are continuing to grow as artists rather than just like putting on a good show and staying comfortable. And
you gotta be uncomfortable in the game, because there's gonna be so many people that you have to encounter or potentially even work with that like you don't. They're maybe not terrible people, but you don't like them or you don't click, you don't get along. Like, mm-hmm. Not everybody's going to be a perfect fit, but there's very little workspace in this realm sometimes. So you have to sometimes work with, not that saying to like work with terrible people who don't want to do any accountability for whatever, but might have happened. But it's a really nuanced topic to think about how people can go about that the right way. Like it's, and I feel like right and wrong is such a
nothing is black and white.
Nothing is that
art.
Black and white. And there's so many like factors that go into it all that it's it would definitely be something to dive into in parts, because there's all the things like people bring into the space with them from past experiences, and I know my stats played a part in me interacting in difficult conversations, my own past triggers and stuff, and just learning how to. Even people I'm like really close friends with who I've known this entire experience sometimes still have to sit down and be like, okay, we need to come up with a better plan for how we communicate because this doesn't work.
Yeah. And I think maybe what you were talking about in your story is like you've grown in this community and you've stayed by it. And that takes a lot of work. It's like really easy to like you were saying to just come in and get really romanticized by it all and to get like really caught up in the fleeting notion of it. But then people are going to change, especially like young and like creative people, they're going to ebb and flow. And my goal is to not lose these connections just because they change. I want to change with them. Mm-hmm. I want to change as an artist. And it's really, I feel like it's scary when you like find your place in a community to try and stay there and like never move so that you never lose it. Yeah. But like, you have to welcome
trauma response too. Yeah. Like attachment issues can play a part in that. I know with me, like it's always like, it's always such a struggle to like drift apart from certain people that I like really loved being in community with on a regular basis. Yeah. But like accepting that's part of life. And like, sometimes there's things that happened where like, oh, it was a conflict and it just didn't get resolved or whatever.
Yeah.
But like other times it's just a natural drift. And because you're in an industry and lifestyle that you where you're constantly meeting different people and being in different circles, like there's only so much that you can physically upkeep at any one given time, especially when trying to like make art, create spaces, produce shows in your case. Like,
and that's where I think curiosity comes into play a role, is because you are aware of all these different factors in your own life. You gotta know that everyone involved has their own layers of shit sandwiches that they're trying to fucking compartmentalize and not, you know, combust underneath. I feel like you just gotta approach everything as like a student of life. And it's like, what do I have to learn from this moment? What do I have to challenge myself? And what challenge do I welcome? What challenge do I say, that's not my problem? Because you are allowed to have boundaries. Boundaries are sexy.
It's also very okay to just ask somebody if you're on the end of a drift where you're like, oh, I didn't mean for this to happen and I didn't want it to happen, to bring it up and be like, hey, we drifted and like, I know life happens, but I just want to make sure that there wasn't like something behind it that we need to talk about. Like, and I've had those awkward conversations before where I'm just like, like I want to check in and make sure. And do I feel confident that like maybe they were comfortable enough to say the full story all the time? No, but I take what they told me at face value and try to tell myself not to tell myself a story that isn't what they tell. You can only go off what people are willing to tell you.
But
you can't decipher everyone and be a mind reader for every single person. No,
but you've entered that conversation out of respect for the connection. You've done that as like an act of love to that person, to the connection, and to yourself too. Mm-hmm. Because like, how ballsy is it to just be like, hey, what's gone wrong here? And I want to do better by it. And I feel like so much harm gets done in people not addressing their needs until the needs fucking erupt out of their face and they cause a lot more pain than they could have 6, 12, however many months ago.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely being guilty of that for sure.
We all are, because I think it's such a natural thing to want to avoid conflict. It's fucking, the world feels like conflict. Like waking up every day can feel like conflict. It's like a war. Yeah, I came from a house
with a lot of conflict too. Yeah. So it was like, I didn't want to have that in my other life situations. So
who does?
I would go so hard on people pleasing to avoid conflict that then I wouldn't realize what bothered me until it really bothered me.
Yep.
And then trying to have those conversations without getting emotional, because I cannot help that those conversations just trigger that part of my reaction.
Yeah, and it's the difference of reacting versus responding. And the more space you give yourself between the event happening and your how you act about it, you can shift whether it's a reaction or it's a response. And that's where the work comes in.
Yeah.
And the practice of doing those hard conversations and of putting yourself in that space, you're building that space between. And you're just strengthening your fucking arsenal, and you're just becoming a badder bitch.
That's one thing I learned from my friendship with Danny, was giving myself more space before reacting to or trying to fix conflict.
Yeah, like, she's good at that.
Oh, she's so good at that.
Yeah, she's a wise queen.
She'll be like, oh, I know that if I deal with this now, I'm going to deal with it in this way. So I just need to like take a minute. And I'm always like, damn.
She can check herself.
Take a page out of your book.
Oh, we got to get her on the pod.
And the compartmentalizing skills that she has are next level.
But yeah.
We all have our moments.
But nobody gets there automatically. No one's just born with these tools.
Fuck no. And a lot of people's upbringing like puts them at a deficit of these tools too a lot of the time. Like,
being alive in this world, zero boundaries.
I had to learn all about boundaries as an adult. Like, all of this shit I've learned about like healthy boundaries and like communication has been like as an adult.
And I feel as artists too, like I feel like any person who's choosing to be vulnerable enough to create something and put your voice out there, they're doing the work. And there's a reason that a lot of artists are put on these pedestals and then criticized endlessly. And like, we all fucking combat each other.
Putting people on a pedestal is a bad move in the first place.
It's a bad move.
People are always like, oh, you're modest, when I like downplay certain things. But it's less about modesty and more about, I don't want to encourage any kind of vibe that makes one person sound like they have more to offer than anyone else.
No.
Like, it's just like, I just don't see the point in that. Mm. So like, even if people are like half kidding when they say certain things, yeah, I kind of downplay it because I'm like, I just don't like that aspect of raising one person higher than another, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's funny too, because we celebrate like these acts of putting yourself out there so much because we admire it so much, because it's like that like performance and sharing your true raw voice, something we all want to do so bad. And we're like, oh, they're doing it. It feels so good to watch and be a part of. And it's, that's what we're all searching for. And I feel like what I'm trying to say here is, I feel like people think of artists as like overly emotional and weak, but it's, we're actually so strong because we're choosing to do the work. That fucking accountant who sits at his desk every day and never compartmentalizes anything and never shares his voice, no offense to accountants, but there are people who like never do the work to break down the deficit that they're born with just like in by being in this world. And artists are like out there doing the work. And
there are artists who also
don't do the work and they want to get the ego boost.
Well, yeah, sure. Or they're like, I think that it's less about one person's like job or whatever realm they're in, but more about just someone who just genuinely has that desire. And I feel like I see that desire in a lot of people, because growing up in the scene, like just growing up in the time frame that I came up in, the showing emotion was not the thing to do. No. Like in general, no. Like, it wasn't cool. And you're like, oh great, like you're the edgy person who hates everything, yay. But that was a thing. It was like a very trendy thing to like mock things and whatever. And it just,
it's a fake confidence.
It puts a whole other barrier between you and connecting genuinely.
Yeah.
And then so, because it also makes the person who is more sensitive to that stuff, like, hesitant to show you their genuine self, because you mock everything, so why would I show you who I am? So I feel like it's nice to see, the more I see people who, younger, like, seeking to do that genuine connection and dig deeper,
it's the curiosity. It's
a big thing, yeah.
Totally. And, like, I think being curious takes telling your ego that you don't know everything. And like people who downplay like a new experience and they're like, oh yeah, like I've seen that 100 times. It's like they're telling themselves that they know everything. But that's such a limiting way to live. It's like actually so limiting to you. And then it creates that like intimidation of, okay, I have nothing to offer this person. If they know everything and they're closing themselves off, it just like, it totally inhibits that connection piece that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's funny because that fear too, like that like fear of what do I have to offer, what do I bring to this situation, is part of what I know like it personally hindered my ability to communicate openly. And because like to me, I always was worried from just the way I grew up that like speaking your mind too much was just never a good thing, that like people that would just lose you people like in your life, like people some people you care about would leave if you were too honest, and if you were difficult because of your honesty. If your honesty made you difficult to be around, that was like the worst thing,
because people don't like discomfort.
So I took a long time to feel any kind of comfort in being able to really be like, no, this is a hill I have to stand on, because like it's gonna get weird and that's fine. Like it's, but like, and there's been times where it's caused me to like separate from people, and not necessarily under any negative situation, but it's just realizing that like
the
values don't align anymore, and like that's okay.
Yep.
And that like we just get to go on different paths, and sometimes your paths like weave back to each other and overlap, and there's still lots of care and like celebrating each other's wins and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But then there's those other times where conflict just like the person doesn't want to hear it or see it at all. But yeah, I definitely had a lot of pressure feeling like I had to be always likable and like easy to deal with in music if I wanted a place in the music scene,
especially as a woman.
Yeah. And it wasn't until a few years ago that I started to give less fucks about how likable I was, and then I think I went really hard into not giving fucks, and then I like had to dial back a little bit. Like, especially when you like moderate Facebook groups of a bunch of obnoxious people, that you can go really hard down.
I feel you. There's like a thing that I oscillate between, which is like trying to do everything for people, like all action based, or trying to be like with the people and their emotions and slowing down. It's like the speed that I have to like oscillate between. And I actually saw this really awesome codependency scale this week, and it was like, on one end it's you can be a people manager, and on the other one you're a pushover. So it's, you don't actually want to control people too much, but you also don't want to be controlled too much. So there's so many things to pull apart there, and I've got so many fucking lessons just in the last year of taking my role as a producer more seriously and doing more of the management shit and getting that slap back in my face, because you can't, you have to be so careful when you are building expectations and assumptions for people and your own internal pressure gets externalized, yada yada. But my main lesson that I've learned is, as a competent person who's even meaning like the best intentions ever, people can still feel like they don't have enough space around you to be themselves when mm-hmm. you're a really go-getter kind of person. And Isaac actually gave me the best feedback, which is just ask more questions.
Yeah.
And it's, again, so curiosity.
Ask questions. Curiosity is important.
Ask and also questions. Just, like, remember, let people like, tell you what they want to do.
Yeah. And taking up space is a great thing. But sometimes once you've used that skill or learned that skill to take up space, like a part of the responsibility, I think, is to leave room for people who struggle to take up space. What? Like, you got to leave a little, you can help take up the space and then allow space in that for someone else who wouldn't take up their own space.
Yeah.
Or you can encourage them to share space and take up space themselves and stuff.
And something really good for the controlling brain is to just trust that they're going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the time, like, people who aren't as confident as you, I've had this before where I get nervous that they're not going to figure it out or they're not going to know where to be, let's say, in an event. But the more I can just trust people, the more they're going to fucking enjoy themselves mm-hmm. because they're not overly controlled and stiff and feeling like they don't know where they belong. It's, I'm going to curate this experience as much as possible, and then I'm going to trust that people are going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really cool thing too, of letting go of the control at a certain point. It invites a lot more flow into experiences as well. Get on the bus.
Get on the bus.
Get on the bus. But
yeah, I think it's one of those things where, you know, some people really appreciate the direction and want that. It like helps them just be able to be like, okay, cool, I'll just do the thing.
Yeah.
Just come to you if I need something else. Perfect. It keeps me on task. Like, I know where to go to get reset for the task. But like other folks, they need the space and trust to do their own thing.
Yeah.
I have times where I want both. Like, I have times where I just want to be left alone to do the thing. And I have times where I'm like, okay, I want the guidance.
Yeah. Yeah. And my like biggest pet peeve is being told to do something that is not worth doing or not based in like reason. So it's so much better to not fucking ask something of someone and ask them what they want to do rather than give direction unwarranted. Because people are smart. People are smart enough to know what they want most of the time. And that's why I want to be my own boss pretty much for the rest of my life, is because I work for so many people where I want clear direction from you. But also, don't you dare fucking tell me what to do. And then I'm stuck in this paradox.
Like, you can't just be like, oh, because I said so. Like, that's not a real thing. No. Like, as an adult in the world.
Oh, I would. I would make my teachers cry. I would make them, like, so upset in elementary school. Because I was like, I know that you don't actually have any idea what to do with us today. And you're just trying to fill the time by bossing us around. And I see right through it. And fuck you. And it's, this poor woman's just trying to do her job, but I'm just like, I refuse to fucking submit to your bullshit. Like, my time and energy is precious, because especially at that age, I definitely have a big ego, and I love who I am, and I love the energy that I bring, and I can definitely value that a lot. And I think there's balancing you need to do in that as well.
Totally.
And giving your time to others is like such medicine.
And just asking people questions, like you said, and talking to people, getting to know people and letting them behind that curtain is key too. Because a lot of the time we roll through doing things and we don't realize like how we're coming off. Like, sometimes I remember years ago, someone thinking that I didn't like them. Actually, I think we were both under this impression that, like, the other person, like, wasn't super fun. Like, we were just like, I don't know how you feel about me type of thing.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with anything real except for the fact we were both, like, quiet. And for me, it was like, I was usually in a sense where if I wasn't in the performance headspace or the jam headspace or whatever, it was just like I would socialize with people I was comfortable with, and then I would just keep somewhat quiet just because I was conscious of the fact that, like, I'm a talker and I do take up a conversation a lot of the time. And so I would try to be quieter around certain people, and then realizing when, like, my neurodivergent, like, introverted, like, brain was like making it seem like I'm less engaged than
Yeah, well,
than
people
I am,
will feel
you know,
that
where I'm like, oh shit,
space.
Like, I, yeah, that wasn't the intention. Just like, just existing weird brain spaces.
Yeah.
I made it seem like I wasn't interested in connecting with you when
Interesting.
I am, you know,
yeah.
But
people fill that space with their own anxiety.
Yeah, and we'll tell ourselves whatever story, right? Because we're like, this is what makes sense. Or that's, you're so used to that in the scene that people just will dismiss you because you're
totally.
Whatever, or for whatever thought reason you've thought of.
Yeah, I feel like we're just all trying to understand the world around us at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're anxious, is because we're just constantly trying to analyze everything and trying to like understand everything. And we make judgments of each other because we're trying to feel safe. And we're trying to, can I be myself around this person? And if not, I'm going to like go the other way. And that's just the pack mentality of being social creatures. We need to assess our social surrounding because that's how we survive. I love going back to monkey brain because it really helps me feel a lot less fucking crazy about being obsessed about all of the people in my life, because I'm such a socially driven person.
Yeah, I definitely feel it too, where there's been times where I'm like, okay, I want to be around the people I feel most comfortable around, because for so long I've forced myself to be in circles I didn't feel comfortable in, because I was on like a mission to fit in or be accepted or be of
which
value
is so
or whatever
normal.
And then, you know, not realizing until later that like the values aren't aligned or whatever, or just from that starts to become like more and more obvious when life just takes you in different directions.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I have no choice but to seek out new connections, because
yeah,
like I still need to do that same community thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I try and keep all my like connections under this like 50-50 rule of like, I just want to feel matched. And if you, the kind of relationship that you can commit to me is sending me one text a week of, hey, how you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And I can match you in that. That is a sustainable relationship.
Yeah.
And this goes for work relationships, like professional, personal, everything. I'm like, I just want to feel matched in my commitment to how much I can show up for you, because then we're matching each other's level of respect for each other
mm-hmm.
as well. But we're getting into the nitty gritty of like the experiences we've had that have taught us why vulnerability, curiosity, conflict resolution, and just like communication are so important. And I think those are like the guiding tools for me moving forward. And those are a lot of the tools that putting myself out there as like a producer has like really reinforced and taught me a lot, even in the last 6 months. And I want to share what I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
Just like really stoked to share that.
Yeah, that's something too. Like one of the main driving forces between doing like podcasty things or like wanting to do that is just to have a resource for some of these things where like things that whatever random nonsense like we've learned in our experience can help somebody else along the way.
Yep.
And there's a place you can put it all.
Yeah. People who feel lost or fragile and don't really know how to be yet, because it's a long journey. But I feel like the part in me that like really knows who I am and where I love to be sees that in you.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to like amplify that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I know that it's not been easy for you. That's why you fucking value it so much. And that
mm-hmm.
is why we like need to hear your stories and want to share my stories too.
I feel the same way. I'm like, oh, it's like I see a lot of that. I see a lot of my like younger self in you as well.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, but in you're like an unstifled version. Like
you're
less of you is stifled. So it's like you're just like bursting at the seams with the you-ness.
Thank you.
Hello, friends. Thank you so much for listening to episode 1. We totally forgot to record a visual exit of this interview because my camera died and I'm pretty sure I had to take a poop. But I love you so much.
Yeah, we love you. Thank you for listening to Squish, the podcast, episode 1.
And we promise the audio quality and general experience will only improve from here on out. We love you. Bye.
Bye.
We want to thank everyone who made Squish happen. Specifically, we would love to thank Elena Alstrom and Renata Baldwin for the wonderful background music for our intro and outro, as well as all of our vocal squishers who offered your cute little voices.
So adorable. We love you so much.
I want to thank Katie for editing together our intro and outro soundtrack.
And Tash for doing the video editing and a bunch of great graphic design work.
That's right. We're thanking ourselves because we fucking did this, bitch. If you've made it this far, thank you so much for sticking around. And we hope to catch you on the next episode.
Heck yeah. Thanks to everyone for being part of it.
Love you.
Love you.